And welcome to America's Widows.
The podcast where you watch Winter and the Soldier Falcon, a show that's definitely very good and interesting all the way to the very end, and doesn't have any weird, awkward moments where it feels like it pulls out of the punch. Kim, how did you find this episode?
Well, that was disappointing.
The impression I've gotten from our conversations... The impression I've gotten from our conversations so far, just in, like, the chat, is that you disliked this episode more than I did.
Yeah. I am willing to reevaluate after getting my grievances out there. And to be fair, I don't, like, hate it. I think this is one of those situations where the previous few episodes raised the bar really high. And then this episode's like a perfectly passable finale to a show that was worse than the show that I feel like I was watching.
Yes. Definitely around the 17-minute mark of this Marvel action movie third act, I started checking out a little bit. Although, I feel like at minute 17 of any action sequence, I would start checking out a little bit.
I love the phrase minute 17 of any action sequence, as if that's a totally normal and fine thing to be saying.
Love the industry, love the
minute
cultural context.
Minute 17.
Let's talk about Sharon. Let's start there, because what the heck?
Well, okay, first of all, I'm disappointed that the Power Broker did turn out to be the Red Skull back from Vormir.
Yeah, like, that just seems like a sure shot.
Yeah, we called this one.
Yeah, I mean, like, on the one hand, at least Emily Van Camp is still going around being evil and hot. So, you know, Ruth writes.
You say as if you do not also want Emily Van Camp to be going around being evil and hot.
I don't know what you mean. I've never been horny in my entire life. This is a little bit silly, I think. I'm struggling to get a firm grasp on what exactly Sharon Carter's personality and deal is in year 7 of her existing in the MCU, and it's a little bit of a, oh, she's evil, didn't see that coming, did ya? Except for the fact that, like, they threw in a bunch of foreshadowing. You know, for all the fact that, like, we said, oh, Sharon's almost certainly the Power Broker, we never really talked about the idea that, like, that might mean that Sharon is a comic book villain, because it never really entered our heads, because that would be silly.
Yeah, I had not considered that. I thought that if Sharon was the Power Broker, we'd get some, like, interesting twist about the Power Broker, rather than the twist being Sharon is evil.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the thing we need to preserve there is the evil vibes of the name Power Broker rather than Sharon's established personality up to this point. Which, to be fair, is, not much.
I am a little bit annoyed that by, spoilers by the way, by the mid-credit sequence where Sharon is reinstated to a position in the CIA, we have an evil CIA agent who is literally called the Power Broker doing, like, weird shit in a foreign country and undermining their entire political system over there. But those two things are not related to each other. Oh, great. The CIA now has an evil government destabilizing mole.
Yeah,
who's totally
but...
there. For no reason related to the CIA's behavior whatsoever.
But like, worse than that, like, it turns out that it's Reverso, that actually Madripoor has a mole operating in the CIA. Some opposite day shit.
Yeah, not a fan of this.
It's a little bit silly, I think. All the same, We'll do some speculation later, but this indicates that, like, Emily Van Camp is going to have the role of a villain in a prospective second season, and, like, I think she would rock that role, at least. How about we talk about Carly?
Alright, jumping straight from Sharon to the young child she murdered,
Yo, in that scene, I don't know if you've seen the Dear Sisters skit from Saturday Night Live, the Ooh, What You Said thing, but that's all I could think of, that, like, when Carly went down, that, like, she that she was just going to get up again and shoot Sharon.
Okay, so this, I think, indicates the extent to which that scene didn't work for you. Because
yeah, I thought it was fucking corny and stupid, and I also thought that it cut right into the next scene where Sam is meant to be a metaphorical angel holding Carly in, like, the Pieta pose. Yeah, yeah. How do you feel about that as, like, a significantly more, as a person who's significantly more interested in Christianity than I am?
Okay, so I have no real problem with the whole Pieta situation, just in general, because I like that image and, like, the symbolic potency of it, although it is kind of also a cliche. I think if you're going to do that, you need to be sadder.
Yeah, my main take on it, as someone who has just watched Man of Steel this week, is that if you like this, then you're not allowed to make fun of Man of Steel.
That's fair. I mean, the whole...
At least in that respect.
The whole thing about the Pietà is that it's meant to be, like, there's an innocent person who's dead, and a person is holding them being like, I loved this person and now they're dead and I am overcome with emotion. Like, that's the thing, yeah? You're not just supposed to sort of, like, parade her dead body around in front of a bunch of senators, Sam.
Oh, no. Well, I think it's a little bit better than the thing from Asylum of the Daleks in Doctor Who.
Yeah, that scene doesn't work either. But then again,
it's just like, oh, let's have a cool movie moment. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. No, okay, I think that pose only works when you are really devastated or the person's not dead. Because that's also a bridal carry. So if the person's not dead, you can just, like, carry them out. I think I'm more interested in the emotional significance of the scene and, like, political significance and all that. But, like, as an aside, right? Sam carries her out, there's no visible blood, and he puts her on a stretcher, and then just sort of leaves her there. So for about 5 minutes, while he's giving this beautiful rousing speech to the senators, until he says, this woman died, I was like, is she alive? Is she still alive? I couldn't tell.
Send her to the hospital to bury her? Undead her? Is it a stretcher to bring her to the morgue? What's up?
There's no cloth. Like, her body is literally just there out of frame. You can see the stretcher. There's no cloth over her. She's just dead. Just there. It's a little disrespectful, to be honest with you. I didn't like it very much.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Paul Itics?
Okay, so I'm not a fan of... So we've been watching the Flag Smashers go over the edge for a while. And I'm not going to complain about it excessively, like, as a general thing now, because we've already complained / accepted it in previous episodes. I will say that the optics of having Carly, a young person who has largely leftist views, try and kill a bunch of innocent people by setting a police van on fire is very gross and bad.
Yeah, it's really like the literal NYPD.
She sets a police van on fire, except there are hostages in there, and oh no. I think that's very irresponsible. I think it's gross to put that on screen.
Yeah, I can only agree.
It's also gross to have Bucky call the cops on the rest of the Flag Smashers. What the fuck, Bucky?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Why is Bucky, like, Barnes calling the police?
Jesus. Jesus Christ. Like, I'm struggling to find interesting things to say about it because it just straightforwardly doesn't work. And yet, like, it's the most significant failure of the show, right? That, like, it just pulls this at the last second. And, like, you know, I don't want to relitigate stuff too much, but, like, Carly in particular, not so much the other Flag Smashers, who I get the impression feel like they're in over their heads and can't get out of it now. But Carly in particular, just, like, oh, she has a noble position, but her methods are fucked. And it's like, I feel like that's something that you only write when you've kind of written yourself into a corner slightly, or when you have a limit to your political imagination.
Yeah. Or alternatively, if I want to be really nice about it, if your political imagination is fine, but you have an editorial team and or somebody who can pull your funding, who takes money from the
Department of Defense. If you say that we should abolish borders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hang on. To my understanding, this movie isn't... This movie, yeah, that's very telling. This show, It's not actually working in collaboration with the Department of Defense or the Air Force in the way that Man of Steel or Captain Marvel was.
No, I don't think so. But
Marvel has a working relationship with the Department of Defense that they don't want to damage. So I think that speaks to I think there is a non-negligible chance that like what you're seeing here is the result of like people who are trying to make a show about race in America and are trying to have the military be part of that web of themes and politics that it's talking about, but they're working within a particular production context. And this is where that's,
yeah,
to be fair, finally coming home to roost.
Yeah. I kind of expected this to happen the whole time. I mean, honestly, when I first started watching the show, I was like, oh, this is going to, it's going to end like this. I think by the previous episode, which I remember the two of us were absolutely raving about, and Caitlin, we were like, I had deluded myself into thinking that it was not going to end this way because of how amazingly well everything had gone up to this point. This is a very dead dove do not eat moment for me. I think a major failing with this, both dramatically and thematically, is that I have no earthly idea what Carly's trying to do here. I don't get it. What's the plan?
I'm vague on it. And like this just sort of brings it back to our Gonzo conspiracy theory from Nando, which that like it was meant to be about vaccines, but they snipped it out because they didn't want to do a COVID conspiracy theory.
No, but I'm not upset about... Okay, so her goals, I understand. So it's like she wants to prevent this vote from happening because they're going to round up people like cattle and shove them into camps, you know, in a totally non-fascist manner. Yeah. That I understand. Like, fine. But if you're going to make the whole thing about how Carly's choices are only bad because her methods are bad, it might be a good move to, like, explain to us what she's trying to do. Not what she's trying to achieve, literally what she's trying to do. What is happening?
Like, how does she think the things that she's doing are going to lead her toward her goals? Because, like, especially, like, halfway through this episode in particular, and, like, this is partly to do with her going off the deep end, but, like, what's the rationale? Like, it seems like she's just literally trying to blow herself up, and it's not in a fun, sad Steve way, just, like, kind of randomly trying to blow herself up as a sort of, like, sacrifice to the soil or something kind of a vibe.
So first they're taking hostages, which is, by the way, shot in a way that is very... Like, it's quite difficult to figure out that they're taking hostages up until Carly says, we might have to kill the hostages. And then I'm like, they've taken hostages. And then with absolutely no negotiation whatsoever, she starts setting some of them on fire. Why, I don't know. And then someone's in a helicopter, presumably another set of hostages? But why?
When you lay it out like that, and maybe we've missed something, but when you lay it out like that, it does feel like there were problems during shooting. That, like, there was some part that was meant to get shot that would give necessary context that makes it all make sense, but, like, they just missed the bit where, like, Carly negotiates or whatever. Or, like, worse yet, someone decides that it had to be cut for time, and, like, Carly just sets people on fire now.
I
would be surprised if that were the case, because that would be kind of insane.
I don't get it. I just think that, okay, first of all, it sucks that that happened because it's bad to watch. But also, if her main beef with Sam is, you shouldn't be blowing people up, Carly, like, the logical extension is for her to, like, do something really beyond the pale to get what she wants, rather than just randomly locking people in vans, some of which she sets on fire for no reason.
Well, that is beyond the pale, partly because it's fucking nonsensical.
Yeah, it is!
Yeah, I like it's the Tai Lung thing. I was talking about this on Twitter a few weeks ago, where like, pardon me for pivoting in tone, but the villain of DreamWorks' Kung Fu Panda, Tai Lung.
Oh yes,
he's also basically in the right because they wanted the villain to have a point, and he also kind of like his journey is that of a archetypal kung fu protagonist, but he like the test audiences thought he was just in the right, and they didn't understand what the issue was, so like they just inserted a bit into his backstory where he killed a bunch of people for no reason. Like, he just went down the mountain, killed a bunch of villagers, went back up the mountain. And I feel like that's what's happening with Carly here a bit, or at least that's like the feeling of it. I suspect that there's like a blueprint somewhere where like this is worked out a bit better, but that's not the show, I think.
No. That's disappointing. No. I think my main thing about, like, my main guess about what happened here, aside from it was incoherent and bad, if I were to come up with like a reason why a person might do this to the story, it is possible that somewhere along the way somebody went, hey, wait a second, it really doesn't matter how many people Carly blows up. If the people she's planning on blowing up are planning on rounding up people and forcing them into camps, someone in the audience is going to think that that's a perfectly reasonable thing for her to be doing. And then the writer's room was just like, okay, so we can't do that, so we'll just do a bunch of other stuff. And maybe if it's so incoherent no one knows what she's doing, people will agree that her plan is stupid.
Great. Nailed it. Perfect. Yeah. 5 out of 7.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Do you think it's time to talk about John Walker?
We may as well.
We may as fucking well. John Walker, redeemed?
That went nowhere, did it? That really went nowhere. Oh my god.
Okay, so clearly they want us to think that John Walker, if not quite fully a good guy, is at least on the good guys' side in this episode, because he shows up and he helps them in fighting the Flag Smashers. The thing is, what we were led to believe, I think, at the cliffhanger of the last episode, is that he is making his own suit and his own shield and stuff, with a view to taking on Sam and, like, challenging him for the title of Captain America again.
Yes.
And, like, I understand, subverting expectations, whatever. But his character journey at that point really was leading to that point. So I don't really understand why he was turned around to try to, like, why upon seeing Sam, or even Bucky, he would not just, like, tried to fucking club their heads in, because that's kind of his deal at that point. And then, like, he's just like, you know, fighting the bad guys, and like, that's not even something he wasn't doing before. This isn't a character change moment for him. His darkest moment in the show is that, like, he killed one of the Flag Smashers and, like, clubs their heads in with the shield.
Mm-hmm.
And like, but like, I feel like a lot of what he's doing here is just like the same but different. And all that's different is, like, the framing of it. Like, the main moral difference is that he doesn't, like, kill any of the Flag Smashers, and that's just not a very compelling moral difference in the context of the MCU, where everyone kills lots of people.
Everybody else.
Everyone kills the mooks. Yeah, everyone kills everyone else, and they just fucking get up again. It doesn't click right. And, like, he's got his moment that's framed as a big hero moment, where, like, he's trying to pull up the NYPD van, and I wasn't a fan of that.
God. That did give me an emotion. Out of context, in the moment, I was like, okay, cool, well done, John, but I don't like it.
Yeah. There's the fucking stupid part at the end, and, like, we're just going full spoilers. There's the fucking stupid part at the end where, like, Elaine from Seinfeld says, we don't need a Captain America. We need a U.S. agent. It's just
I
like,
need to lie down.
Wow, why are we watching this shit? Straight up, I know we're doing another podcast. We gotta get out of this fucking Marvel cesspool. We gotta review something legit. I swear to God, we can't pivot into Agent Carter.
I thought I was reviewing something legit.
Yeah, so did I.
I thought that was what I was doing.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's I can't, not your
I can't,
fault.
I can't even talk. It is my fault. This was my idea.
Well, we would have been doing this anyway. We just wouldn't be subjecting all our listeners to it.
Yeah, shout out to our now up to 94% female listenership. Hey. Sorry to waste your fucking time on this show.
Okay, no. All right.
We've been Falcon and Winter Soldier. Our show is cool. Our show is great.
You know, no, let's not just turn this, like, this doesn't just have to be an entire scream and cry fest, although it could be.
Yeah, I don't want to go full fucking angry video game here. I don't want to just spend an hour being like, this is a bucket of ass.
I don't get that reference, but it's still funny.
You know the type of internet review I know what you mean. About. Yes.
Okay, so the thing about the John Walker storyline is...
Yes.
It's... You know how there's this bit of received wisdom about how there's, like, a big difference between trying to subvert expectations and bad writing in that you... Everything about a story is going in one direction, and then for absolutely no reason you take a hard swerve in a different direction.
Yeah, the Game of Thrones thing that everyone said when, like, the last season of Game of Thrones came out. Yeah?
Okay, so...
Why do you bring this up?
John Walker has been the big jump scare cliffhanger twice in a 6-episode season. The first episode, where he shows up and everyone goes, fuck, it's John Walker, we don't want him here. And the fourth episode, where he gets blood all over Captain America's shield because he clubs a civilian in the head. To death.
And also in episode 5 when he's making his own costume. That's half the show!
That's terrible, you know? He's like, he's the big bad guy. We like Carly. Carly's cool. John's a dickhead and he kills people. That's the storyline. And suddenly Carly's setting police vans on fire and John's like, I've given up on my revenge quest. Let me save these civilians.
Yeah, but, like, given up on his revenge quest for no particular reason that is given to us. He doesn't have a moment where, like he doesn't meet Sam's sister and understand, like, his humanity. He doesn't have a bit where, like, he's saved by Sam. He doesn't fucking find out about Isaiah Bradley. There's nothing.
In the exact previous episode, he meets Lamar's parents. And Lamar's parents are like, I'm so glad you killed the guy who killed my son. And he says, I would never let that person ever get away. And then we have this, like, creepy shot of him, like, staring into the middle distance. And we're like, oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
He's gonna murder Carly. Which really doesn't happen. At all.
It doesn't happen at all. Like, they have a bit of a fight. But then in the end, Sharon takes her down? But that's just so, like, fucking...
Okay. Never mind Sharon for a minute. How about the fact that he and Bucky are suddenly friends, and they've called the cops together, and Walker quotes Abraham Lincoln about mercy, and he calls the cops on a bunch of freedom-fighting anti-border people?
Yeah, and, like, freedom-fighting anti-border people who were, like, visibly reluctant to be involved in this venture and are clearly, like, kind of strong-armed into it.
Abraham Lincoln.
Well, I mean, he would do that.
He would. I'll say he that. Would, but he it's, would. Like, fine, right? Bucky's like, oh, lol, Lincoln.
Yeah, it's just, like, the same dynamic that Sam and Bucky had in episode 2.
You know, the thing about this is it's not just a character thing, where on the one hand I'm like, shit, they ruined a perfectly good character arc, because I was really enjoying watching this guy slide into increasingly unhinged villainy while still remaining somewhat sympathetic. Like, that was a fun time, I was really liking that.
Yes.
But also, thematically speaking, I went off at length in the past about how amazing it is that he is becoming increasingly unhinged and yet at every stage saying, I am a representative of the US military, I am what they made me, I am a white guy in a militaristic society, and this is just what I'm like.
Yes.
And that was great, that was fantastic. And the fact that he gets redeemed for no apparent reason, and there's nothing that turns him around, there's no epiphany, he's just the same guy, and it turns out that he's actually not that bad, is... It ruins it. It's just, then what are you trying to say? Yeah, soldiers may, on the order of the military, go out and murder civilians and look really bad doing it. But when it comes down to it, at bottom, they're good people who will give up on a personal revenge quest to save a bunch of people in a police van.
It is, to me, I think, much more insidious than like the stuff that people retroactively may make a big deal about in Winter Soldier, where like,
Yeah.
like it's just foisting the systemic problems off onto Hydra, and it's just like, okay, that's legit. It's legit criticism, but like, this is so much more fucking. This is just wild. This is just fucked. This is just like you like made 5/6 of a systemic analysis and a critique, and then you just like, and then you turned it into propaganda. It's
Why
just
have we
so
done
weird.
this? Yeah.
It's so weird. What did you like about the episode?
Oh my God. Well, what do you think? What do you think I liked about this episode? Go on. Everybody,
I
let's
think you
take a
liked
wild
Bucky.
guess.
I think you liked Bucky.
Oh my God.
And
I'm such a sucker. It's actually kind of embarrassing.
oh, it's okay. Tell me a little bit what you liked about Bucky in this episode.
I like Sebastian Stan's face. I like it when it does things.
He's grown into it.
I like his face and I like when it does things. Big fan.
Yes.
Big fan. I mean, from the moment like we start seeing like and everything that Bucky does in this episode just made me feel feelings. I'm not saying it was all great, but it was all at least passable, and I have such a weakness for it that I was really happy. I do totally love the bit at the end where he and Sam are just chilling, and like Bucky's at the Wilson family barbecue and he's got literal children hanging off his arm. Fantastic. Sublime. Really wonderful. I'm also notably the hanging off his metal arm implying that he's able to hold a bunch of kids because his arm is metal. But Sebastian Stan does not have a metal arm, so now I really want to know. Were the kids on wires or is he just really buff?
Damn. That's yeah, what's the story there? We need some behind the scenes action on like not any of the big action sequences, but specifically the bit where like a bunch of kids are hanging off Bucky's arm in a way that makes Kim feel feelings.
It's, from last episode, I was all like, I like to see Bucky happy. I like to have him living his life. I really like that. I love the bit where he leaves a bag with Steve's notebook in it for his therapist. And like, I finished the book. It's beautiful. It's very sad and beautiful, and I love it. And also, the fact that he left the book with his therapist rather than just leaving her a note is very emotionally rich because that was Steve's book. And like he has this whole thing about how he hates that Sam gave up the shield because all he has left of Steve is the shield. But he also has his notebook and he's let it go. He's let it go. He doesn't need him anymore.
Wow.
It's good.
Jeez Louise.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. I love Bucky. I love his arc in this. Also, when he goes to talk to the Japanese guy about his son, well, that sucked, but it was, good suck. But like, when he says he was murdered by the Winter Soldier and the Winter Soldier was me,
Talking about Bucky and the good suck. Sorry.
don't
Okay,
ruin my
no, to
moment. No, it's fine. But okay, so I was just kind of expecting him to be like, "I killed your son," which. Well, maybe don't phrase it exactly like that, but but he was murdered by the Winter Soldier, and that was me is a really loaded way of phrasing it. And I don't really know how to articulate how I feel about this, but those feelings are positive.
Although I was thinking at the time that like he's phrased it as I didn't have a choice, and I was thinking like, okay, I understand you want this scene to have a certain poetry of it, but wouldn't, surely you should be like, oh, I was hypnotized. I
I was
literally didn't have control over
brainwashed.
my physical actions.
Yes.
I was brainwashed. It's just like, make yourself understood. You don't have to get defensive, but like, see, I've seen too many apology posts, and this is Bucky's apology video.
Oh no. I will say that as much as I loved this scene because of its
emotional Hey guys, Bookie Burns here. You've probably seen some stuff on Twitter and on the news lately,
and I just wanted to be honest with you about what's going on because I always want to be honest with my fans. Oh my god. No, okay, as much as I enjoyed this bit for the emotional pain, I personally am not... what is he hoping to achieve with this? Why is he telling this man this?
Well, that's the thing that was they went through in the previous episode when Sam was talking to...
Yeah, but I mean... Yeah. But the thing is, right, that when Sam says you weren't atoning, you were avenging, you weren't, like, making amends, you don't just go to people and unburden yourself because it will make you feel better. You need to serve them. That, like, did not sound... I know Sam was literally saying, tell this man who wanted to know how his son died, how his son died. On the other hand, I feel like a much more interesting way of going about it would have been, well, whether Bucky says so or not, to, like, have him continue to help this person out, have him actually serve the people he hurt, rather than just going to what seemed to be, like, 30 or 40 people's houses and telling them, I killed your family member, which does not seem productive to me. That seems like the opposite of productive to me, actually. Especially since he and this man are obviously friends and cannot be friends anymore.
When Sam says you don't just burden yourself, you serve the people that you want to make amends to, what exactly does that look like? Like, does it look like running errands for them and get like, he's pretty old, like going to the shop for him to... Like, I'm not sure what specifically does that involve, and this is, like, the show's answer to that, and it... Like, I've talked a lot in previous episodes about a feeling of specificity to it, and, like, it this last episode, in this aspect and in a bunch of other aspects, just feels a lot fuzzier. Like, there's... Yeah. Even the bits that I don't dislike, they have an air of, like, kind of throwing up the hands and saying, I don't know what this do.
Yeah. The thing is that what Bucky was doing with this guy at the beginning of the show seems a lot closer to what I personally would have considered amending than what he actually does. Because what he does at the beginning is he befriends this man, he takes him out for lunch once a week. He's obviously a very lonely old man, you know, and like maybe doesn't have a lot of money, and Bucky buys him lunch and diffuses fights for him. And keeps him company when he's grieving and is kind to him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not saying that you should necessarily hide your actions, although the degree to which that's Bucky's actions, I don't know. But he's helping a person and cares for this guy, and like they have a good relationship. And it really, like, it makes me wonder the extent to which, like, if what you're saying, and I think this is a great thing to say, is... This is not about assuaging your guilt. This is not about getting peace for you. If you really want to make amends, you give a person what they need and you serve them for as long as it takes. In what sense does ending a good, kind, you know, like, caring relationship by telling a person, I killed your son while under the influence of Nazis? Like, in what way is that more about him than it is about Bucky?
It's like they got the A points and the B points backwards.
Yes. Or alternatively, like, we saw Bucky about to tell the guy the truth and then he couldn't do it. And, like, what would have been really interesting is if, instead of it being, like, Sam giving him the push he needed to finally tell the guy the truth, it would have been something along the lines of Sam's speech showing him that it really doesn't matter if he ever gets absolution for the things that he's done. What matters is that he continues to do good things for people, including this person whose son he murdered by accident. By accident.
That's not the
way I would put it, but yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Gosh. Do you have more things to say about Bucky before we move to Sam?
Okay, I've got two more things to say about Bucky. The first one actually has to do with Carly as well, which is when Bucky's on the phone with Carly and Bucky says... I've been there, I've done this, I've tried to fight for what I believed in twice and didn't work both times, and I always remember the people I killed and so will you. Now, this is puzzling to me. Because...
Yeah.
when was the second time he tried to fight for something bigger than himself? So obviously the first time was against the Nazis.
As we said in the previous episode, Bucky's ideology wasn't really, like, anti-Nazi so much as it was, like, thinking Jenna Coleman is hot and, like, kind of being the jock to Steve's version. Like, that was the dramatic role. And, like, Seth played it more interesting than that, but that was where the script was at. And then, like, the second time, I'm not sure. Like, he did die a second time along with everyone else who got snapped. But, like, what? Winter Soldier? That's not him.
That wasn't... That doesn't count, what's going on? I mean, so does the second time mean when I fought Thanos to try and save everybody? Because that seems like a really bad... I highly doubt that Bucky is thinking that hard about all the people he killed on those occasions.
Bizarre. I'm not even sure what it's supposed to mean.
the only plausible explanation based on the words that he says is that he considers the first time to be the time he was fighting in the Second World War and regrets it, apparently. Which is understandable from a character standpoint, but politically seems a little bit weird. And the second time is the time when he was a brainwashed Nazi cyborg assassin, which I feel like that shouldn't count.
And I don't think the show thinks that it counts.
No.
Well, not that it doesn't count, but that, like, it wasn't him.
Yes.
And, like,
I don't, like, if this was meant to be a character beat where Bucky's trauma overtakes his ability to make a rational decision and or actually talk to a person, that would have been fine for me, but they never got into it, so I'm left to believe that this is meant to be, like, a normal and fine thing for him to say. You know, I was once brainwashed by the Nazis and I killed a bunch of people for evil means and I've never been able to get over it. So if you, in pursuit of your goals, with full autonomy, decide to kill someone, I'm sure it will have the same effect on you. Not why.
I don't mean to hit you with a cattle prod, but we're 40-something minutes in as we haven't talked about the main character yet.
Yes, sorry, let's move on to Sam.
Samuel Wilson is Captain America.
Okay.
How do we feel about that?
Well, how do we feel about that? How do you feel about that?
I think the costume looks a bit fucking silly.
I was gonna say that! I didn't want to be the one to say that! It's not a good costume, I'm sorry!
Yeah, like, he just jumped... He goes through the window and I just laughed. I just laughed. Like, it's some fucking Doug Walker Suburban Nights shit.
It's not a good costume.
Oh my god. It's not. It's such a shame because, like, I was reading that Twitter thread. I can't remember who made it, but I was reading that Twitter thread the other day about, like, how John Walker's costume is very carefully and deliberately made to look bad on purpose. And then, like, this is clearly supposed to be the much cooler and better one.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's silly. No. The colors are too bright. It doesn't gel with the rest of the aesthetic of the show.
It looks terrible. And I don't really understand why either, because Sam's Falcon outfit is gorgeous. Like, it looks really good on him. What happened?
So, Sam has decided, not exactly that America is good, but that what he says at the end of the episode is that Black people built that country. Black people bled for that country.
Yes.
And he'll be damned if he doesn't fight for it. And that is something ultimately that Isaiah Bradley, like, straight away says, well, you always had me there. So, like, there's a sense that the show... But at the same time, there's no way that the show isn't signing off on this, right?
It's got to be Sam. Like, Sam's point of view by the end of the show is the right one, obviously.
Yes. There's just no way that that's not what the text is trying to say. So, I get it.
Yeah.
I also have sympathy for it. I want them to drop the shield into a Wakandan volcano.
Yeah, but that was never gonna... Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I agree. Although I will say that I like Sam's final argument that is basically... I wasn't a fan of I'd like to fight for it, because I'm not personally, like, why would you do that? But, you know, not to digress too much into personal content, but, like, my first language is English. It's the only language I'm fluent in. I did an English degree at an English university, and I had a lot of angst about this because I'm Chinese, I'm from Singapore, obviously. You know, there's like a lot of colonial history and baggage built up around English being my first language. And the thing that finally made me less horrifically angsty about this whole thing was like, well, the history of how I ended up here aside, this is my language now. And the only people who are trying to take it away from me are the fucking assholes who saddled me with it in the first place. So why should I give them the satisfaction? Which seems very much to be Sam's point of view. He's like, well, I want to be Captain America. And why shouldn't I?
I can get that. There's a similar but different thing with Irish in that, my first, the only language I'm affluent in is English, and I was taught Irish in school for like 12 years, and like most other people who were taught Irish in school for 12 years, I don't speak any Irish. It's the way it's taught. But like, I think the fact that there's the facility there for it and people still aren't into it, at a certain point, it's our own fault. So, and we're just not into it. So, like, the blame kind of shifts. So, it's complicated. Apologies for going on a tangent about something that doesn't have anything to do with Captain America.
That's so fair. Also, 12 years of Chinese lessons, so I can't relate. But, yeah. How do you feel about the whole Isaiah Bradley thing?
I reacted positively to that.
Yeah, it was nice.
But now more than ever, I feel like I don't know really. I'm really not an authority on this.
I'm not going to tell people how they should feel about it. I thought it was nice. I thought it was nice that Sam finally gets Isaiah a corner of the Smithsonian exhibit on Captain America. That's very sweet. I think also the implication that what that means is that the government's going to leave him the hell alone from now on is also very nice. So I appreciate that. And I think it is cool loaded in a way that I find interesting and not necessarily good, but like not bad either, that he's specifically got a little statue of Isaiah Dunn. Like police vans, statues have a lot of political baggage in this day and age. And the fact that they got him a little statue is, I don't know if that's nice or what, but it's interesting, and I like that it's interesting. On the other hand, Isaiah has made a very good case for why everything that Sam does in this episode is not going to work. And I liked the case he made, because I thought that was the best thing in the show. And the fact that it turns out that he is literally wrong, because Sam has done the things in real life, annoys me.
Having said all that, I gotta give props especially to Carl Lumbly, who plays Isaiah Bradley, because he gave like probably the best performance in the show.
That was beautiful.
Like, that was just remarkable. And also, like, without wanting to go into continuity bullshit too much, I do hope we see more of Eli.
I don't know what I expect to see with the Young Avengers series or movie. I'm nervous. I don't know. It'd be cool, though.
Yeah, like, that's getting a little bit close to the bone for us, because, like, that's the one... Well, for me personally, anyway, it's the one Marvel comic thing that I actually give a shit about, and I actually would be disappointed if they fucked up in the adaptation process.
I mean, this is one of two for me, and they're already butchering the other one as we speak, so...
Zooey mama.
Oh, Hawkeye. But yeah. What else is there about Sam? Sam's big speech. What do you think of Sam's big speech?
I didn't dislike it.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, if I had a problem with it, it was that, like, just the aesthetic choice of ending this show with a big speech. But even then, I don't dislike that. It's just kind of like, oh, okay, we're doing this. It's time for one of these. But, like, yeah, it's a good one, and Anthony Mackie does it well, and I don't think I disagree with the points made.
It's a great speech. I love the bit where he literally says, "You own the banks. You could feed a million people with a phone call. Who's making these decisions? Who's in the room with you?" That's very good. I like that a lot. I like it when the guy says, you don't understand the complexity of the situation, and Sam is like,
yeah.
I think that's a good thing, actually.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
My issue with this speech is not with the speech at all. I think it's a fantastic speech. My issue with it is that in the context of everything surrounding it, it does seem to be saying that all you really need to do is get a minority, like a person, a member of a minority group, into a position of enough power and let them yell at a couple of rich and or powerful people in front of a couple of cameras, right, and everything will be better. And so you don't need to resort to extreme tactics like stealing supplies for refugee camps. That, like, if Sam had just gotten his shit together faster, it all would have been fine.
Yeah.
Which is not the case.
It's very Obama era.
Yeah, it is. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
I'm also not a fan of how Sam leverages the fact that Carly has died to get this. Because it doesn't feel genuine or earned. It feels very, like...
Yes.
I mean, not to be crass about it, but, like, you know, whenever someone gets murdered and then a bunch of other people see accountability for that, and then a bunch of other people say, oh, that person did die for nothing. But yes, they did. They got murdered.
Yeah. They. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, But the speech was good, though. Yeah. Like the speech.
Yeah, the speech is good. That's a very good point. It's a very important point, and unfortunately it has left me in a position where I cannot pivot into speculation as to what's going to happen next in the MCU.
We can do that. We'll just take a moment.
Okay.
And then,
so what's going to happen next in the MCU,
huh? It's going to be a bit more graceful than that.
I don't know what you mean.
Do you want to take a minute to also mention the title card changing at the end of the episode?
Yes.
I thought that was great. It's good. It's fun. It's nice.
Yeah, that's cute. Like, it's straightforward and it's cute. I didn't see it coming, even though I probably should have.
It was very nice.
I'm glad that this doesn't mean, like, the literal name of the show has changed in some capacity, because that would just be confusing for, like, everyone.
One thing that I thought about that, first of all, cheers on the aesthetic decision to use the exact same font and, like, everything as the general title. It's great, fantastic.
Yes,
they missed a massive trick by leaving it as the Captain America and the Winter Soldier, because the obvious title change is Captain America and Bucky Barnes.
Oh yeah.
Because he's retired. He let go of his baggage. He's getting over his trauma. He's not the Winter Soldier anymore. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah. That's just... Woof. Woof.
Sorry. I don't want to ruin that for you. It was great. I liked it. I was just a bit like, come on, guys. You were so close.
I feel like I got away with saying woof once there, but once I said woof twice, it became weird.
No, it's fine. I don't want to be, like, Madam Poppy Pooper this entire episode. I did actually like that moment. I was also like,
yes,
you guys have to understand symmetry. You can't change half of a two-part title.
Yeah.
And also, Cap and Bucky is, like, a thing.
Yes.
And...
Oh, I should admit that, like, when the title came up, like, I was just like, it's the end of the show. And then, like, it took me, like, almost a full 5 seconds to actually read it, and I was like, oh, they changed it!
They did show it to you twice, so you had a second chance to have a look at it again.
Yeah, I sure did, and I need that. No thoughts, head empty. Yeah, okay. Speculation.
Okay.
If we do get a season 2 of this show, I expect that we will see the return of John Barrowman as Captain Jack Harkness. I know we all want River Song back, because River Song is so good in Winter Soldier, but, like, there just hasn't been any buzz about that, and, like, maybe they're keeping it under wraps, but I just think that, like... That Malcolm Spellman is going to commit to the Jack Harkness angle, because, like, he's so nostalgic about that, you know?
Oh my god. You might be right. Do we think we're going to see more of Sharon, or is that just, like, a thing? Because, obviously, sequel tease, but that doesn't necessarily mean she's going to be there.
Well, I think that's the plan, right? But, like, it could just be the MCU thing of, like, they set up a sequel tease and then they change their mind and it's just this dangling thread forever. And it's left to fanfic writers to figure that out.
I think we're going to see the Red Skull back from Vormir.
I don't think we're going to see the Red Skull back from Vormir. I don't think he's going to come back from the woman murder cliff.
I would hate to let anyone get the impression from me saying this over and over that I actually do want to see the Red Skull back, because I don't. I don't care about him. He's stupid and also a Nazi.
He's stupid and also a Nazi and not even a good Hugo Weaving turn.
I was gonna say, Hugo Weaving has worn much stupider masks and done much better at it.
Yeah, he's like asleep at the wheel in First Avenger.
Well, yeah, who wouldn't be, frankly?
Do we want to move into final thoughts?
We can. Have you got any final thoughts?
You go
first. Oh, no. Okay, so several things. First of all, I'm very disappointed in this episode, as you can tell. I don't think we're at a stage yet where this has ruined everything else for me, because the rest of the series is so good. And also, like, episode 5 ends on an obvious cliffhanger, and it's also not, like, fully resolved. However, it's close enough to resolve that if I ever did do a rewatch, I could just stop there and be fine with it. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely, like, some way you could cut this together that, like, even if it was a rewrite or something, or that you could, like, cut it together such that, like, the very slow-paced fifth episode is, like, the end somehow. And, like, you also cut in the bit with, like, Isaiah Bradley in the museum or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's, like, a fix that you can pull there.
Yeah. I mostly just saw about how... I mean, for a show that has been so exactly what I wanted it to be without even realizing it, for 5 weeks. Like, so I swear this has been one of the highlights of my week for 5 weeks. Yeah. In week 6, for it to suddenly be like, I'm fighting off the visceral urge to Cinema Sins the shit out of this, is really quite disappointing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there we go. I can't help but get really annoyed at how every prediction I had for episode 6 was a lot more interesting than what actually happened.
But... I mean, that's just your pitch for the fic.
However, I do have a sneaky little conspiracy theory about this episode, which is probably just me going off on one because I was unhappy with it and I want everyone else to agree with me, including the series creators. But if you pay attention to how everything resolves, absolutely nothing is satisfying in a way that feels almost too much to be unintentional. I mean, like, Sam... and Bucky have nice character arcs, and they wrap up well, and it's very pretty. But all the Flag Smashers are dead, which we know is a bad thing, because we like them, and we've been made to like them. They were blown up horrifically in a police van.
Yeah, and that does feel, like, deliberately upsetting.
Yeah, John Walker has been rehabilitated as a creepy-ass, like, black-clad Captain America ripoff guy. With a name that is definitely not screaming U.S. interventionism in other countries. And apparently the woman who has commissioned him is meant to be Madame Hydra, according to the internet.
Yeah, oh yeah, like, she's transparently evil, to the point that, like, I understand there's some sort of, like, evil league of evil that, like, John Walker could be a part of, but...
there we go.
Yeah, God.
And now, thanks to Sam getting Sharon a pardon... There is an evil mole in the CIA, because that is gonna significantly change the extent to which the CIA is bad, you know?
Yeah.
So my theory is that, first of all, and I don't think that this is too out there, but first of all, the ending of the series was probably not originally conceived this way, or if it was, like, I'm not saying that there's some secret hidden sixth episode somewhere, but I just assume that this is not what
Apple Tree Yard
people expected.
I was gonna say.
This is not what people, like people who were making the series originally wanted it to be. I will also point out that I think, based on all this, that some of these, like, it is possible that we are meant to take away from this episode that the victory that Sam and Bucky have, and Sam specifically has, while on the surface quite nice, is undermined at every possible angle, like, from every possible angle, and it's actually kind of shitty. It's just bad. All of this sucks. Also, that would explain why Sam's Captain America costume looks so bad.
They're just working up for, like, a deconstruction of the second season. I don't know. I think that's just another fix-fic pitch.
Yeah.
My final thoughts are that I did not like this final episode. I feel it undermined a lot of what I enjoyed about the show up to this point.
Yeah.
I do not feel that I wasted my time, because I did enjoy 5 out of the 6 episodes.
They were very good.
Four out of the six episodes. One of them undercut the entire point of the show, and the other was very, very racist. But, you know, 2/3 ain't bad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like I wasted my time, and but I feel like part of that is because I had a very good time making a podcast about it, and like I deeply, deeply enjoyed that.
Yeah, same.
And it's kind of at the point that, like, after all this, I feel like I can ultimately not truly and recommend the show to anyone, and that fucking bums me out because, yeah, like, if it doesn't stick the landing, it doesn't stick the landing, and that's such bullshit.
I know, I've been telling everybody that this is an amazing show. And I was right up till last week.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think we've come out of this basically unscathed, you know? Like, when it sucks, we've always said that it sucks. And, like, the only embarrassing thing about it is that we watched the Marvel show in the first place. And, like, you know, who among us?
But I'm not embarrassed, I want to share something I love with people, and I love this so much.
Yes.
And now I don't feel like I can straightforwardly tell people that I love the show anymore, because the last episode sucks. It's not good.
Yeah. Oh, well, like, I think everyone's familiar with that you loved the show and then it didn't stick the landing. And, like, at least that experience was contained to 6 episodes and, like, a 5-week zeitgeist.
We could be podcasting about Game of Thrones. Imagine if we did a weekly Game of Thrones podcast.
Jesus Christ. Imagine, like, giving a years-long podcast about Game of Thrones, and, like, then, like, that's how it ends.
Oh, it could be worse. It could have been Game of Thrones. That's damning with faint praise of a
God, that's the level we're at. It could have been Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit more after wrapping up like this, but I just want to say now, to you listening at home, like, thanks for listening to the podcast.
Thank you, especially
if you listen the whole way through. We fucking loves doing this, and we will probably return soon in some form, although we haven't hashed out exactly what that will be yet. You can keep an eye.
We're doing the Loki show.
We're not doing the fucking Loki show. We set up top.
I know. I'm kidding. I don't want to do that either.
Yo, I can't, like, I low-key floated that with you.
and you said I have no
opinions on the Loki show. Like, that's just even more egregious, because, like, not only was Loki most popular from his one appearance as a bad guy in the 2012 Avengers movie, he was written by fucking Joss Whedon, and he was very much a Joss Whedon-type character when he was at the height of his popularity. That was the version of the character that people went for, you know? And, like, that, not only is that, has that come and gone, the guy who's, like, the poster boy for that, like, he's a fucking sex pest and a monster, and, like, he's had his big fall from grace. And, you know, maybe the pendulum will swing the other way, but I'd be surprised, and he's never going to get back up to that, and I think that entire mode is fucked. So, like,
Well, it's not Hiddleston's fault, so...
It's certainly not Hiddleston's fault, since Hiddleston has always done good work, and I hope he gets his money, and I also hope he gets literally any other role at any point. The poor boy.
He's good in Crimson Peak.
Oh, good.
But yes, yeah. Thank you for being here with us. That was nice. I really enjoyed doing this a lot, too.
Yes. In the meantime, since we're not, like, leaping straight into another project, check out our other respective podcasts. Kim, you plug first.
All right. So my other podcast is Scribe to Screen, still on hiatus, but with a solid back catalog. That is at scribe_2 on Twitter. And you can find us at Scribe to Screen Podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and SoundCloud. Yay.
Cool. And I am doing my other newish podcast, which is Reading Player One, which is a comedy podcast, a pretty chaotic comedy podcast, where myself and my lesbian married Canadian friends, Jesse and Sam, we read Ready Player One, and we talk about a bunch of stuff in and around Ready Player One. And they generally torment me. We do a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes on the Patreon where we watch weird pop culture stuff like Heathers and the Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s. And generally, it's pretty nuts. We're getting more and more chaotic in each episode, so I think you'll have a lot of fun with that. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Loafers Writes. You can read more of my writing at marklaherty.wordpress.com. And my Patreon is patreon.com/loafers.
Woo! You should donate to that Patreon. There's lots of good stuff on it.
Thanks.
Subscribe, not donate. You're paying for services and goods.
It's very cheap.
Yes, it is. For the good value for money. I'm on... Twitter at Kimberly_Chu. I have music at soundcloud.com/ChuKan. And I'm on Patreon at patreon.com/ChuKan, where you can read my undergraduate dissertation and my latest essay on Raya and the Last Dragon, which is also available on Loafers' incredible blog site, Spacetime Junction.
Yes. And that piece, which I loved and I was the first one to see and I was like, holy shit, has gotten rave reviews as like a beautiful piece of writing, which it is. So like definitely check that out if you like this podcast even slightly.
Thank you very much. I think you would enjoy it. Yes, please do go read my writing. It's cool.
Thank you for listening to this podcast about a show that we loved, but unfortunately that show died and it's dead. So I guess in the end we're the American Widows. Roll credits!
America's Widows were inside us all along.
Oh, I hope so.